This is On the Other Hand.
Hello, and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, Glenn White, here with my co-host, April Chatham Carpenter. Get ready for today's conversation as we learn how community leaders in Arkansas are helping work towards solutions. So, April, who's visiting with us today?
Hi, Glenn. I'm so excited about our guest today. It's Dan Reimer, and we met Dan actually through our work with Braver Angels.
Cool. Look forward to this conversation. Dan Reimer, welcome to On the Other Hand. We really appreciate you joining us. Let's get started. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of who you are and what you do with your time.
Sure, Glenn. I retired as Director of Public Health for the City of Fort Worth and moved to North Little Rock in 2010. Worked for a little while with the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. And then since retiring in 2012, I've been looking for meaningful opportunities to engage in social action and social discourse.
Okay. And I believe I remember at some point you said you were from Wisconsin. Is that right? Or just tell us how you came to Arkansas.
Yes, I'm a proud Green Bay native and a solid Green Bay Packer fan. I came to Arkansas really to serve my faith community. We're members of the Baha'i faith. And I had a responsibility while living in Fort Worth to visit the communities in Little Rock, Springdale, Fayetteville, in order to help their elected governing bodies learn how to organize and grow. And when I retired, I just decided to get a little closer to those responsibilities.
So if I understand you right, you're saying that even when you were in Fort Worth, part of your Baha'i faith responsibilities was to go up to Northwest Arkansas and help them learn how to
organize and grow.
All right. That's interesting. Okay. That's not the kind of match I would have first thought of. How did that go?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You may be aware that Springdale is the home of a large community of folks from the Marshall Islands. And among them are about 150 members of the Baha'i Faith. In fact, their local governing body, elected by their members, is almost all Marshallese, and they conduct their meetings in the Marshallese language. And so they have challenges learning how to organize, how to relate to the broader community. And so I'd come to their meetings, and we'd go through some educational processes and so forth.
Very cool. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, you know that our program is sponsored by Braver Angels, and I want you to tell us a little bit about how you found out about Braver Angels.
When I was looking for promising initiatives to partner with, I consulted with Just Communities of Arkansas. And Donald Woods, the executive director at the time, shared with me a number of possibilities. Braver Angels was one of them. And so I made a connection and started learning about it. I actually began the process of becoming a moderator, but I've gotten too busy to finish it, but I hope to one day.
Okay, very good. Now, one of the things I know about you, and I first learned this through Facebook, that I saw something interesting about some local organization that recommended people come on board and I think on a weekly basis have what was called meaningful conversations. And that's one of the ways in which we first came to have a conversation. Can you tell me a little more about that and how you got started working with that group?
Sure. Meaningful Conversations is a national social media initiative that's designed to create a safe place for members of the community to discuss in a respectful environment difficult issues that face all of us in a spiritual focus.
That's interesting. Well, that's a really nice consistency with the Braver Angels approach to have the respectful conversations and such. So, and I remember when I did sit in on one of yours, that certainly you followed that model of having respectful conversations. Everybody was in a good place, so it felt like a pretty good and safe place to kind of express your opinion.
Yeah, we go over conversation guidelines at the beginning of each meeting, and I think you'd find them hand in glove with the Braver Angels process.
Okay. Anything else you can tell about what Meaningful Conversations does at this point?
Sure. People might see us on Facebook, Meetup, or Eventbrite. We discuss a variety of topics, including such things as, is disunity a disease? So what can we do about spirituality in a time of great divide? Is equality unfair? And we have a few quotations to prompt some discussion, and then we encourage everyone to participate by reading, by sharing their comments, by listening to one another with respect and learning from one another.
Do you have any particular ground rules or kind of guidelines that you ask everybody to follow?
Yes, we have 5 guidelines that we go over at the beginning of each meeting. And they have to do with listening with an intent to learn, keeping in a humble posture, respecting the contributions of every person, etc.
So I'm curious, Dan, this sounds so interesting. I wonder how they actually run a conversation when they get in there. They've got those guidelines, but just as the example, is disunity a disease? So what happens in the actual meeting?
Well, there's a moderator who is trained to facilitate, and he or she works to make sure everyone has a chance to express their opinion. We allow differing opinions without having to agree, but we learn to listen and try to learn from one another. And sometimes an intervention is required, but it's very rare. We find that people buy into the guidelines and they feel comfortable with them. We've had people say, it's wonderful to come to a meeting where I'm not talked to, where somebody actually listens to me.
It sounds similar to what we do in Braver Angels, right, April?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And I just curious as to whether the people that come to this actually represent multiple points of view, or do they tend to be on one political side of this political spectrum or another?
Well, it's hard to tell because political discussions don't really come into it much. But it's a wide range of people. We have Jews, Christians, Muslims, Baha'is, young, old, black and white. And it's amazing to see how comfortable everyone is with one another.
Well, then I think there might be a few listeners who would be interested in maybe checking you out, participating in that. What would they need to do to make sure they are able to engage in these, as you call them, meaningful conversations?
If they go to Facebook, Meetup, or Eventbrite, and they search for Meaningful Conversations Little Rock, they'll find a link where they can register with a free ticket, and by entering their email, they'll be sent a Zoom link to the meetings on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock.
Very good. Thank you for that. Switching topics then, I think you have done some important work from what you've told us about work with patient advocacy and working in the healthcare system, and also, of course, within your faith community, which you've already talked a little bit at least about meaningful conversations. So my next questions are going to be related to that kind of topic. So let's start with healthcare education. You've worked in there. You've also done the patient advocacy role. How has that impacted how you see yourself as a citizen?
Citizen participation is the term that comes to mind. As a patient advocate on the UAMS Patient Experience Leadership Team, I can bear witness to the commitment that institution has to seeking feedback from patients so the hospital and staff can make continuous improvement. And I just welcome the opportunity that they've given me to be a part of this process by assessing things from the patient point of view, making suggestions, giving reactions. And I have found the entire team to be very responsive, not only to me, but to the other patient advocates on the team.
You know, one of the things that comes to my mind is that when you have a situation like in healthcare, where you have healthcare providers, and the folks who are receiving the healthcare, the consumers, if you will, a lot of times it goes well, but it doesn't always go well, and there's the potential for conflict and misunderstanding and stuff. So I would assume that that's part of your role as a patient advocate. And that reminds me of some of the things we deal with in terms mm-hmm. of difficult conversations. Can you talk a bit about how you approach those kinds of things and how much that's an issue for you in your work?
I have done some work in cultural competency training. I developed a program when I was in the city of Fort Worth. And we've had quite a few discussions about it during my time with the patient experience leadership team. And I find the team very receptive to the concept of careful listening, of conflict resolution. They have a department of diversity and inclusion that does a lot of training for employees and other staff members to make them aware of cultural differences and how they can be sensitive to them in their interactions with patients.
It's interesting, careful listening. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that takes place in your cultural competency work.
Careful listening involves listening with the intent to understand. And that's different from our natural inclination, which is listening with an eye for how I can insert my opinion, looking for what to disagree with so I can enter into an argument. Careful listening seeks to understand and find commonality. It reminds me of Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and his admonition that we're most effective when we seek to understand before we seek to be understood.
Yeah, that's definitely something that comes to my mind too, and is very familiar to us in Braver Angels, as you know, because one of the main things we start people off with is skills for bridging the political divide, and the first thing we start with is listening skills. And so listening, as you described, to try to be curious about where the other person is coming from, as opposed to listening to get evidence for your rejoinder. You know, so that comes up in several different ways. That's good to hear. The other thing is, in terms of your faith community, the Baha'i faith, I wonder first if you can just give us a little bit of a capsule summary about the Baha'i faith.
Sure. The Baha'i faith is a world religion that seeks to build bridges and promote unity by supporting some fundamental principles, such as there is only one God. That same God has sent all the divine religions we know of. How could there be more than one creator of the universe? We believe that humanity is one. There's only one race, and that's the human race. And if we could treat one another like aunts, uncles, cousins, it would be a better world. We believe that men and women are equal. They're like wings of a bird, and the bird is humanity, and both wings have to fly with equal strength. So we believe we have a twofold moral purpose. One is to find the qualities of God that He's planted in our hearts, develop them, and give them back to the world. And the second is not only to transform ourselves, but within our sphere of influence, to transform the world that we're a part of.
That's interesting. So I'm curious about the part about all the world religions are basically worshiping the same God and are part of kind of one central message, if I'm understanding you right. So I'm wondering how you handle it when you run into people with different religious persuasions, because some people in some of the religions kind of are very cautious and careful about staying within their track and maybe not as open to other ways of looking at things, for example, your more expansive view of religion.
Well, I think the most important thing is to be welcoming to all and accept people where they are, not to attempt to change anyone, but share with them a feeling of acceptance for who they are and respect for their position.
So, Dan, I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking about how difficult that is when we are dealing with moral and spiritual issues that are so deeply ingrained in our own kind of beings. But having those open hands towards others to listen to their perspective seems like it would be really, really important.
And, you know, one of the things that brings up in my mind is the degree to which your faith, the Baha'i faith and its principles, how it impacts what you do in the community, for your work with the community and that sort of thing.
Yes. Stemming from the fundamental principle of the oneness of humanity, we feel that it's a moral obligation to promote that oneness, to be active in knowing what we stand for, speaking out about it, and acting upon it. So let me give you an example within the realm of race. We have a personal responsibility to identify any traces of prejudice in our hearts and root it out. Having done that, we have an obligation to create a welcoming environment in our communities by creating an inclusive environment that's welcoming for all. And then thirdly, beyond the individual and the community, we have a responsibility to engage with those in appointed and elected positions to participate in social discourse and dialogue on issues that we think are important, urging those in positions of authority to use principles as a foundation of their decision-making rather than constituency interests.
That seems really important to me. That's one thing that I've observed, my opinion is that there's too much focus on adherence to a particular tribe or belief system or group, as opposed to following larger principles and values that should apply regardless of which particular group you are or are not affiliated with. And that sounds like what you're describing.
Yes.
Yeah.
These lesser loyalties create divisions. And these divisions set us on a course of conflict and competition. And the way the world is going now, we need a greater emphasis on collaboration and cooperation and get away from contention and conflict.
So I gather then that this is what members of your faith will try to do themselves individually and as a group and in your interactions with the world. I wonder about the tough times, like when you're dealing with people who were maybe hostile to that viewpoint, they, for various reasons, maybe it's religious or political differences or whatever. How do you deal with people like that in your interactions and be consistent with your faith principles?
Christianity includes loving your enemies. If one slaps you on the cheek, you turn the other cheek to them. That's a fundamental spiritual principle that I think you can find in most scriptures. And so we operate the same way. We hold no grudges against those who differ or oppose with us. They are loved by God as much as we are. And so we accept their point of view. We don't necessarily condone or agree or follow their point of view. We operate through a principle that's becoming written about as constructive resilience. If we face opposition, we learn how to grow from it. We learn how to advance our principles in the face of opposition. We problem solve, we overcome. We seek to find common ground where possible and work together even with those who think differently from us.
Constructive
resilience.
Resilience. Interesting concept. I may want to follow up on that. April?
Yeah, I'd like to come back to that too. I wanted to just point out a couple of things that I was hearing also that I wanted to ask you about. It sounds like this work that you're talking about happens internally as well as interpersonally in your relationships with others, but then you're trying to then take it out and actually help deal with public policy. Can we talk a little bit about how you uproot the prejudice in your own heart? You mentioned rooting out prejudice in my heart, and that reminded me of Braver Angels' workshop, the Depolarizing Within workshop. But I'd love to hear more about that from the perspective of the Baha'i faith.
The important thing is developing friendships. Getting outside of the box, going to neighborhoods that are not a part of your normal way of life. Let me give you an example. When my sons were young, we encouraged them to make friends with kids who were different. We encouraged them to bring them home and play in our home. We would get to know their parents, have them over for dinner, visit in their homes, go to their churches. It's difficult to have prejudice towards someone you call a friend.
That's a biggie. Yep. It's all about relationships. That's one of the things that I'm really big on. As you may know, I'm a retired psychologist, and so I'm familiar with the social sciences literature in a number of areas. But one thing that keeps coming up over and over is the power of relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, we were taught in my field first thinking about that in terms of how you use that in psychotherapy and helping people change their behavior and that sort of thing. But it just seems to come up over and over in everything that in every walk of life, that the power of a positive relationship with someone makes a difference.
I'll give you another example.
Yeah,
if you'd like.
Okay.
My wife and I go to the Hayes Center, senior center in North Little Rock. There's a walking track, exercise machines, pools, etc. When we first went there, I could see that the population was about 50-50 black and white. And something I learned when I lived in Africa from 81 to 87 was the importance of making eye contact and saying hello. And so I immediately started learning people's names and greeting people as I remembered their names each day that I went back. And I knew that I was beginning to make a difference when others began to call my name first.
So much there about just about the greetings that we have and recognizing the humanity in the other, that they are worth getting to know. That's beautiful.
Yep, very good. So let's get then a little bit into politics. As you know, our Braver Angels intent is to reduce political polarization. So we try to have people voicing their views and explaining where they're coming from across the political spectrum. So where do you stand in terms of your political leanings? So we talk in terms of red versus blue, red being more the conservative, blue the more liberal or progressive, and purple in between. Where do you, how do you characterize yourself?
It's a really good question, and I have a challenging answer.
Okay.
And that's because I don't abide with labels. I think labels tend to divide us and set up unnecessary differences. And so I don't think of myself either as conservative or liberal, red or blue. I'm a registered independent, and so I'm active civically and I vote in every election. But I think it's more important that we identify with the principles that we stand for. And I find that my principles, some of them can be found on either camp. And I think that gives me a bridge with people in different places because I can relate to things that are important to them.
Okay. Can you give us an idea of how you got there? Does this arise from the Baha'i faith? Does it happen before that? How did you come to that particular way of viewing your political stance?
Started with my parents. They were very welcoming people. They were involved in a Baha'i retreat, and our home was at the head of the road. We had all kinds of people coming through when I was 5 to 8 years old, black, white, educated, disabled. It didn't matter. Everyone was welcomed. And so that was normal for me. So to go to school and experience prejudice and discrimination was hurtful. So it started there, an openness to all people of all backgrounds. But then my experience, traveling, I've been on 5 out of our 7 continents and seeing people from all backgrounds, from humble villages to elegant palaces, and there's more similarities than there are differences. And finally, my own personal experience of seeing similarities between myself and others who are very different from me, and respecting those differences and appreciating those commonalities.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, the more you engage with other people and develop a relationship, you find out how many ways that you have a lot of common ground with those individuals.
Yeah.
That's good.
So one of the things that I think about, and I'm like, that's amazing that you grew up in that kind of environment where there was people coming in from all different backgrounds, that you've gotten to travel, but a lot of people haven't had that experience. And so they may only hang out with people that are very similar to them. And I can imagine that our listeners might be thinking, well, that's great for him because he's gotten that kind of experience. But doing what he's asking, I mean, what he's suggesting is helpful, seems like too hard of a task. So where would a person start if they wanted to start thinking about this embracing of difference?
I'll give you another story. I was walking around the track at Hayes one day, I often walk around with an older black guy because we like to talk about solving the world's problems. But sometimes I catch up with someone whose complexion is more like mine. And I've noticed on a couple of occasions, they think because our color is the same, I probably think the same. And they start complaining to me about some of the other people in the center. And I'll listen and let them empty their cup a little bit. And then on a couple of occasions, I've had the opportunity to say, you know what, my life experience is a little different from yours. I've had the good fortune of having friends in different communities, particularly in the black community. And I'll tell you, there is a warmth, a friendship that people who don't have friends in that community are really missing. And I'll ask, is there someone here in the center you consider a friend? And sometimes I say, well, yeah, I talk with so-and-so. So I'll suggest, well, you know what, why don't you sit down with them sometime? And just ask them, tell me about your life. What's your life story, man? I'll tell you mine. Now, I had one conversation with a fellow like this, and a few weeks later, it was his birthday. And there's a little tradition at Hayes where there's a woman who bakes cakes for everybody's birthday, and we all gather in the coffee room. We were sitting there, and it was about to be served, and this fellow noticed that there was a group of black folks over in the next table. And he said, why don't we bring these tables together and all sit together?
You know, one of the things that I was thinking when you were talking about the conversation with the fellow on the walking on the track who had the same complexion as you, was when you mentioned earlier this notion of constructive resilience, right? When you encounter difficult conversations, I'd like to explore that a little more with you. Can you kind of unpack that constructive resilience idea and what that entails?
There's lots to read about it, but to try to put it simply, it means not allowing ourselves to be overwhelmed by adversity, not allowing ourselves to be threatened by hostility, that God loves us, God loves them, and faith means we should find a way to work this out if we just talk long enough. And so engaging active listening with someone who's hostile toward you, drawing them out, saying more, and inquiring, what is it that's caused you to feel this way? If I've done anything to affect that, I sincerely apologize. What can I do to make amends? What can I do to make this better? How can we have a decent conversation, just you and me, regardless of who we are, what our background is? You and I, we're just people. How can we talk together?
That reminds me of a concept that in the conflict literature that's called conflict resilience. And I think it probably the whole idea of resilience is that we're building up an ability to be uncomfortable. And so it's grit at some level. And when I think about building up the ability to even have the kind of conversations that you're talking about, it doesn't happen all at once. We have to take small steps to have that conversation, to greet another person, to ask for them to tell us their story. And that may not feel comfortable. It may be that we're shaking in our boots when we're thinking about potentially doing that. But the more we do it, it's like a muscle that we're working out, which is to me what I think of when I think about resilience. And that's kind of what I'm hearing as you're talking about this concept of constructive resilience as well.
I agree with you. It sounds very familiar.
Thank you to our listeners today for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. And we just hope that you've enjoyed the first part of today's discussion. This has been such a great conversation that we're going to have two parts to this discussion. And hopefully you will take a chance to look at the second part of this discussion that will be on our Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org. So as Glenn mentioned earlier, we'd love to hear from our listeners about feedback on what you like about our program and suggestions for improvement. So feel free to email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. So this program is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor. From your host, April Chatham Carpenter and
Glenn White.
Have a good evening, and let's all work to bring our community closer together.
Clearly, there are problems these days in society with political differences. The polarization level has grown to a point where things are really endangering our democracy and our democratic institutions and our civility with other people. So I wonder ways that you can describe that you see working across political differences to be important.
Well, one is, I think we have to understand our values that underlie our leanings, our thoughts, our behavior. So, for example, my values have to do with a commitment to truthfulness, to justice, to equality, for individual rights and responsibilities, for prosperity for all, for the oneness of mankind. And so those principles are like touchstones for me that spring out my thoughts, my words, my actions. So understanding where we are is important, and then finding out what values are important to others and where we have commonalities and similarities.